Today on Shipment from Shiloh, Maxperts Jordan and Andrew teach me all about maximum punk rock in threat assessment. Then, in Levy University, we define the effect and strategies of clot. Finally, Jordan and Andrew's max fandom is tested in a round of calling in flavors. All this and more on Shipment from Shiloh. Motherfucker, welcome to Shipment from Shiloh, a Netrunner community podcast. I'm your host, Graham. Joining me today, I got my buddies, Jordan.
Oh, hello.
Great. It's working now. And Andrew.
What's going on, brother?
Hey, great to have you guys both back on the show. You guys know each other, even though you live in two different states. Am I right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, shout outs to KOS team.
Yeah, we go back a while. At least a few years.
Yeah, probably two years. That sounds about right.
The first time I remember running into you was at Pastimes, I want to say in like 2015.
I think it was 16 because it was right after Mumbad came out. We played in the cut
and you did super quick work of my NEH with Noise.
Yeah, Noise does that sometimes.
On some of those, like, you were like, install Data Sucker, run Steal an Agenda, install like Parasite, mill an agenda. I mean, it was over in like three turns.
How do you guys remember a freaking store champ from 3 years ago or whatever?
It was the only good store champ performance I had had at that point, like sure. Up until that point in my history of the game. So
actually, it just stuck with me. Yeah, I was very like new to the competitive scene and like regionals at Pastimes thinking I was the shit and got like completely stepped on. So like making the cut was like a big deal for me at the time.
Yeah, it was the first cut I had made, and I actually ended up taking second at that tournament with I played Noise and PE.
Wow.
I ran into Andrew at Madison in 2016, something like
yeah,
that.
I TO'd that regional and you won that regional too.
But the regional that you won, Jordan. Is that the one we're talking about?
I feel like it's become a meme at this point, but yeah.
The regional that I won. You've been on this podcast for like literally 90 seconds, and we're already talking about that damn regional.
Yeah, if you're playing the Jordan's regional game at home, you can stop your timer now.
I'm still sad it didn't get recorded, though, because I wanted those sweet wins over Spags to be cemented in Netrunner history.
I just wanted Will Brown's game on camera cemented. I actually have a screenshot of my phone of Twitch chat during that game against Aaron Andrews, and I have a cutout of Joshua One in the chat saying if Will Brown was the president, there would be no more countries. And that is still on my phone to this day.
That is such a good quote.
We won the store champ at Graham's home store at Fair Game.
Yeah. Doing what Will Brown does best.
Yeah, shouts out to Will Brown, the Ric Flair of the Netrunner world.
Will Brown, I feel like his mastery of hidden information is just like that is the pinnacle of what you want to do with freaking Netrunner mind games. Like, I just have this image of him shouting at Jordan across the table, like, he's installed Double Advanced something, he's like, you want points, here are the points, just come get it. Like Jordan,
he really. I'm not joking when I say I think he's the Ric Flair of the Netrunner world. He's the closest we have to a professional wrestling like character, I think, beyond maybe like some of the online personifications of Damon.
Some players who like I don't think he's maybe the most calculated player. You know, like you were talking about like Eric and Josh and those people who are like, you know, they're like bioroids. They're doing all the math. I don't think Will does the math. I think he's just bold, and I think he's going to kick your ass because of the confidence more than the statistics.
Anyway, thanks for tuning into the Will Brown special edition of Shipment from Shiloh.
Well, I mean, you got to give him credit where it's due.
Yeah, credit where credit's awesome due. Guy. That's right. That's right. He's inspired many a runner to play the game. I have a scorched earth that's autographed by Will Brown because it was the first, like, tournament I went to, and someone was like, oh yeah, that's Will Brown over there, and I was like, the Will Brown of Force of Will fame? Yeah, that's him. So I like pulled out my collection that I had with me, and I was like, "Will you sign my scorched earth?"
I don't want to veer too off track, but I only have one card signed by another player, and it's a Hyperdriver signed by Dave Saya from the UK of Diaper fame.
That's pretty good,
Rose
dude.
At King of Servers like 2 years ago in the second round. Hilarious for all involved, I'm sure.
Yeah.
She wasn't happy because she lost in the first round and then had to play like a world's top 16 player because he lost his first two games.
He's doing the submarine plan, I take it, huh?
I guess, but he did quick work of her. Like, I don't think she'd ever been diapered before.
What a terrible deck name. That is Diaper.
It stuck, right? Like, everyone in this community knows it. Like,
DDoS Hyperdriver.
Yeah, I think it's a top. I actually think it's a top five deck name.
Oh my god!
Because of that reaction right there, everyone hates it, which means that it's top five for me.
It gets a reaction. It gets the reaction out of everybody, right?
Well, my understanding is the name was a typo, but like that's just how it feels when all your ice just disappears and they're like, yeah, I have eight turns to just do whatever the hell I feel like. And you're like, yeah, I got diapered in the face. Oh my
god. I just assumed it was because you used DDoS on Hyperdriver.
I think that is the reason, but like for me, the reason the name sticks is just because that like feeling is just like so disgusting.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh my god. Well, this episode is not all about Will Brown or about Diaper or Dave Saya or autograph cards. In fact, this episode, I wanted to dig into one of the more elusive identities that I just have never been able to quite grasp. So I pulled in Jordan and Andrew because you guys are experts. We're going to talk all about Maximum Punk Rock from Order and Chaos. She is real dope, and we're going to talk about her in our first segment called Threat Assessment. We're talking about Max, who says, when your turn begins, trash the top two cards of your stack and then draw a card. So, she gives you built-in draw, clickless, at the start of your turn. That's amazing. But she trashes two cards off the top of your deck. That seems precarious. So how do you start building a Max deck knowing that half of your cards are going to end up in the bin?
The way I think about Max is like the ID basically says you're on an accelerant, right? So the deck is you're speeding through your deck whether you like it or not. Some of the cards are going to go into your hand. Some of the cards are not. About like you said, about two-thirds of them. So when I'm building a Max deck, I need to build in some amount of redundancy because I can't plan on any one specific card entering my hand at any point during the game. Even if I have a couple of Levy AR Lab accesses in my deck, there's still a decent chance that I won't draw a certain card in my deck. So I need to build in a certain amount of redundancy.
Yeah.
In the cards that I include, as well as preferably a bit of recursion so that you can kind of play with your heap as a second hand.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So what kind of recursion cards are we looking at then?
Well, you don't have much choice anymore these days. Same old thing is an obvious one. And that's kind of been the Max card since she was released. In the past, you had Deja Vu, but that card doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
So
you can get back your events, which is cool.
Right. You don't really need as much program recursion as you used to because you have the heat breakers. So you have Black Orchestra, MK Ultra, and Paperclip.
Yeah.
And those are like perfect with Max. But if you want any other programs, you probably need to include like Retrieval Run.
Okay.
Right. Especially because you're probably playing Inject and things like that. So
Yeah.
So
if you're on the NR draw package, you need to be able to you want to be able to get any non-bin breakers back with Retrieval Run.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I mean, I don't even think of Levy as a recursion card because it doesn't really, it's like bulk recursion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a staple Max card too. I don't think you even have a real choice on Restricted. They use Opus and I don't know about it.
You can use Opus, you can use Trope instead of Levy AR Lab Access, but again, you got to hope that you see it. And if you don't see it, you probably have to Retrieval Run it back out. And I don't know. I'm not
wasting a Retrieval Run just to get out a Trope. you know, it's kind of
yeah, it feels bad. You're not getting real value there because you're actually losing two credits on the difference between the retrieval run and the install cost.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have to let the trope sit there and tick up. So it's just play Levy. Like
just play Levy.
Opus is cute, but just put Levy in your deck and you'll be happy.
So quick recap: if you're not familiar with these cards, Levy is a shaper card that's on the restricted list that lets you shuffle your discard pile back into your deck. So it's one way to play around Max. Retrieval Run makes a run on Archives, and if it's successful, then you install a program from your heap for free. So that's pretty good. And what was the other one you just said?
Trope
is a program that builds up a counter every turn, and then you can remove it from the game, and you get to put a card back into your deck from your discard pile for every counter that was on Trope. Jordan, you have a pretty good Retrieval Run story, am I right? From the...
Against you?
Well, no, just against the aforementioned regional. Weren't you packing some big program or something?
I was packing Morningstar, which is like my innovation, I guess. at the time, everyone was playing Hive, and sorting through those for a credit felt good.
Yeah.
So it was kind of Morningstar is a tech card. I think it's starting to be relevant again because we just got Endless EULA, zero strength, 6 sub NBN barrier.
Oof.
Pretty much eats that alive.
Yeah.
Like any other breaker. So, I mean, will we see a comeback? I don't know.
It does cost 9. Like, that number in the corner is a bummer.
Yeah. It's 8. Is it 2 memory?
Oh, is it 8? You're right. It is 8.
It kind of sucks.
And 2 memory, yeah.
But Retrieval Run makes it free.
Right, well, it makes it 3, basically, because you got to pay for the Retrieval Run. But yeah, I'll pay 3 for that card.
You know, if Paperclip didn't exist, Morningstar kind of makes sense in a Max rig because of Retrieval Run.
Probably. I mean, because we live in a post-Corroder world. Rest in peace. Paperclip notwithstanding, it probably is the only acceptable barrier breaker you would play.
I mean,
interesting too, because most people nowadays are actually essentially choosing their barriers around Paperclip.
Yeah. We would describe Paperclip as meta warping, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's why, you know, a lot of factions will splash for IP block because it's 4 strength barrier.
Right.
And that's a barrier that Morningstar has a favorable ratio against compared to Paperclip.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, hand Morningstar is pretty like mediocre to bad, but if the barrier metagame is defined by Paperclip and most of those are, you know, within its fixed strength range, then it starts to look more attractive.
Yeah.
Now if we end up in a Chiashi meta, put your Morningstar back in your binder and play Paperclip instead.
I know, I was thinking like, oh, what if we got to the point where Morningstar was so prevalent that people were like, you know what I'm gonna put in is like Hadrian's Wall.
Eyes, Ice Carver,
I'm fine with that. You can pay 10 if you just want to end the run. I don't care. I'd rather you don't pay 12 and do 4 net damage. That's a little bit worse.
Firewall is probably better, because then if they are against someone with Morningstar, you still only paid 5, which...
Right, yeah. Firewall is significantly better than Hadrian's Wall in that circumstance.
Or what's that illicit ice that is from Flashpoint?
Oh, Bulwark.
It's strength 8 or something. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's big.
Yeah, it's a big boy. Big boy. Back to Max. What else are you guys considering when you're putting, like, when you're constructing a Max deck?
I think since, you know, your Paperclip, Black Orchestra, and MK Ultra are so kind of established, the next step is usually what's your AI solution? And I feel like there's really, like, that fit the bill, and that's you can either run Femme, which is obviously really good with Retrieval Run. You can run Amakua, Ottman, which is probably like used to be a staple Max card and then fell out of favor and then kind of came back recently.
Ottman's a meta call, I would say. If you know, like, there's like I played Ottman back when the ice suite of Mother Goddess Loki and Excalibur was popular, because you could just set it on 4 and just bust through Mother Goddess servers, or you could set it on 3 with a Data Sucker and just bust through everything.
Definitely.
But I would agree with that. I think in an unknown meta, I'll probably play Femme Fatale because it synergizes, like Jordan said, it synergizes with Retrieval Run, which is probably a card you're playing anyway. It's not exactly an AI, but it kind of fills the same role of letting you get around ice that you otherwise would have a hard time or no chance of breaking.
Right. And Femme Fatale costs 9, but if you use the Retrieval Run effect, then it basically costs you 3. And on
Right.
install, you get to pick an ice, and then you can basically bypass that ice whenever you run past it for minimal money. So that seems pretty good.
Unless it's endless EULA and then it costs you 6.
Right. Well, that you wouldn't be feminine in endless EULA,
I
not
hope not.
intentionally at least.
I hope not.
Otherwise,
I'm
your life
femme
is
from
full of
time to
regret.
time.
The other thing that I'm going to be thinking about in Max once I've got kind of my Breaker's Suite added to my deck on when I'm on autopilot is I have to think about what money I'm going to include. In the past, it was probably harder to decide this when you were a little bit more spoiled for options, but Anarch is kind of set in their ways as far as what money you're including. You're probably putting 3 Liberated Account. You're probably putting 3 Daily Casts. You're probably putting some amount of like Dirty Laundries in your deck as well. But I think you also want to include some form of drip econ, something consistent, because there's definitely games where you're going to mill through all of your liberated accounts or all of your daily casts. So,
Right. Having that long-term option for the late
exactly.
game is really good.
So data folding's a relatively popular option. I've toyed with Tapworm as well, but that's restricted now, so you can't really play it.
Right,
Data
because you got levy.
folding's yeah, data folding's not really that bad because a lot of times you don't need the MU, you're not going to fill up your MU in an Anarch deck.
Well, that's kind of a thing with data folding, though, is that you end up having. Like if you decide that's going to be your econ, it kind of locks a lot of other pieces into place. Like you're probably playing Maw, you're probably going to go the deep data mining route.
I because all of
Cool.
these things, like Maw gives you extra memory, data folding gives you credits if you have free memory, deep data mining gives you extra accesses on R&D if you have free memory, so that's kind of a synergy.
Exactly,
That's the
like they
package
all
there,
kind of
right?
fit into place.
Yeah.
The alternate package, though, that I think we are at least for maybe forgetting about or just not talking about is you can also, I think, play a decent like Clanarch deck out of Max.
Okay.
That's a complete 180 from everything we've been talking about. And by that I mean with Clanarch, you're playing Tag Me. So you're just planning to hold tags and make one giant run off of counter surveillance.
Yeah, counter surveillance gives you an extra access off of R&D for every tag you have. Is that right?
Or HQ.
Or HQ. Let's not forget.
So with that, your AI solution is God of War because God of War gives you tags just passively
Does it give you two
and
tags at
access.
the start of your turn? Is
It
that what
gives
you.
you one tag for 2 virus counters. Each virus counter breaks a subroutine.
That's what it is.
And it's 2 credits for 1 strength, starts at 0.
Yeah.
But with that deck, your money is basically going to be a lot of what we've already talked about, but you also get to play Mars for Martians, which is really nice in that deck and that deck only. Mars for Martians is a 0 cost priority event for Anarch, which gives you 1 credit for each tag you have
Right.
We
and
have
has.
like an air horn sound there for like a Daemon card. This Mars for Martians is a very Daemon card.
It's
Yes, we can do that. So for Mars for Martians, cue the sound. See, I just put in the sound. Just edited it in.
fix it in post.
Fixing it in post. Yeah.
That and counter surveillance are just like the perfect combination of Daemon cards. Like super swingy, like no cap,
Definitely no
totally
cap.
potentially game breaking, like access 30 cards, whatever.
Yeah, anyone who just started playing, I don't think you understand what counters when like look up the card Account Siphon, and then kind of begin to piece this deck together in your head because it
Right.
was as dumb as you thought it was.
God of
And
War, Account Siphon, Dean Lister, and Bob's your uncle. You're set. Counter surveillance. That's all you need.
The deck builds itself, and the thing is, you don't even have to play it out of Max. You can play it out of anything. Max
Yeah.
just sped you up a little bit. But yeah, to Jordan's point, like a lot of because you're a little bit more strapped for econ options now in a post-rotation world, a lot of the deck kind of locks itself in place. Once you start adding this one card, you're like, oh, well, I have to add this other one. Maw, data folding, deep data mining kind of all work together in a really nice harmony.
Kind of touched on the fact that there's really only like kind of a handful of established ways to play Max right now, which is sort of like the Reg Val decks, just kind of standard breakers and indexing, or there's this deep data mining build, or there's the counter surveillance build. There's not really a whole lot I think.
Right. And the major difference, I think, between like a regular Val list and Max is just the speed. With Max, you have a smaller deck and you have the Max ID ability, which just naturally speeds up your game plan. The downside that Val doesn't have is that you are a little bit more subject to RNG and the order in which your cards come up. You know, what if I mill all my money? Totally a possibility in Max. Max also has a couple of corner case matchups which you are way worse against, which we'll probably talk about later on.
Yeah, this is just an observation I have. I've seen a lot of Max decks out there that run these really high-powered events. You know, it used to be Account Siphon. More recently, I've seen stuff like Wanton Destruction, or, you know, I'm sure we're going to see a Diversion of Funds build. Apocalypse shows up in Max. What is it about Max that makes her prone to these really high-impact but situational events?
It's largely, I mean, Andrew was kind of talking about the trade-off between Val and Max, and I think if you look at Val, you're kind of evaluating all of the bad pub credits that you get over the course of a game, which obviously offsets Anarch's kind of lackluster Code Gate and Sentry Breakers.
Sure.
Getting this kind of front-loaded, you know, momentum because you're getting the cards faster. So these high impact events, you know, you're going to have access to them on average maybe a turn or two before you might see them in another deck. So like deep data mining and things like that, you're going to be able to fire them off when they only have one unres piece of ice or something rather than a whole tower.
I see. So maybe a little bit more of like that tempo game, right? Where
Definitely. Like it's really front loaded and you want to be firing off that stuff basically as soon as possible to make it as easy to land as possible.
Yeah, Max gets to play high impact events because her ID ability is so aggressive. You're seeing roughly 6% of your deck, assuming you have a 45 card deck and you're not a clown playing 47. You're seeing roughly 6% of your deck every single turn in some capacity, whether it's going in your bin or it's going in your hand. So you're seeing more cards for free than any other ID, whether you're an Anarch, Shaper, Criminal, you name it, does for free without spending any clicks to do anything or re requiring any setup. So whether they go in your heap or they go in your hand, you'll get to play them at some point because you're already playing same old thing.
Right.
And in the past, it was even better because you got to play Deja Vu, which also allows you to recur cards out of your heap.
Right. Conversely, you wouldn't put in like a big rig style max. You know, on the one hand, you'd think like, oh, the extra draw is gonna help offset the installation clicks that I have to put down. But on the other hand, if you are playing some kind of big rig thing, it's probably because you've got a lot of like resources and hardware and programs that all synergize with one another and they kind of work like an engine. And there's no guarantee that you're going to get all those pieces in Max. So she
Correct,
naturally kind of
yeah.
disrupts that kind of rig, I think.
Max decks tend to be very blunt in their thesis statements. They don't really deviate from the plan very often because they can't. They don't get to. It's not like Shaper where they have infinite tutors for whatever card they want at whatever moment they want it.
Right.
Max decks are more subject to throwing cards in the heap that you have no way of getting back. So you don't really get the luxury of playing like 30 tech cards in your deck the way that that Haley does.
Sure.
With Max decks, I think it's just about no understanding what matchup you're in and how you're going to win that matchup. What is the plan, and how do I win?
Kind of with what you just said in mind, too, I think something interesting about Max is that unlike any other Netrunner ID, she actually kind of discourages the use of tutor cards. Because if you look at like the Shaper ones, you could import like self-modifying code, artist colony, that sort of thing. They're going to search your stack, which, you know, every turn two cards of that is going in the trash and you won't be able to tutor them with those cards.
Right, where I think a lot of other
Crazy.
decks would play a tutor, you would play a recursion card. So in the past, you would play when it wasn't on the restricted list. Cloneship was like a staple because
Sure.
it's just in a deck that's putting two cards in the bin every single turn. It's just better, like on a raw value level than a card like SMC.
Right.
Exactly, and that's the same reason that Retrieval Run almost acts as a tutor more than maybe we would think of it in another deck.
Recursion becomes tutors, which is kind of turns the game a little bit sideways, so that makes her pretty unique,
Does,
I think.
yeah.
So then how do you guys like to play Max? So this is in terms of like a gameplay standpoint, if I were to just to pull a Max deck from Netrunner DB or something, sleeve it up, bring it to my local game night, like what am I looking to do? What kind of plays am I trying to make?
Well, I think for me, when I'm playing Max, I used to be like you, and I would have a really hard time playing Max because I would look at the cards that I'm milling, and I'd be like, oh, I don't get to play that, and I don't get to play that. Here's this dumb card I drew, but it's not these other two that I want. I don't think of it like that. I think of it kind of like, these are the cards that I'm dealt. This is what I get to play with this turn or this round or however you want to think about it. Max is all, you also have to change your entire mindset when you play Max because of the fact that two-thirds of your deck is going to go into the bin.
With that point, like, one of the important skills to kind of learn is just, like, paying a lot of attention to how much recursion you've gone through,
right?
If that makes sense.
Yeah, you have to be more aware of the cards that are in your heap versus the cards that are still that you haven't seen yet.
Yeah. And you know, that goes for the corp that you're playing across from, too. You know, Andrew, last time you came on the show, we talked about a game you and I had, and I was on Controlling the Message NBN, and I knew that if I was going to lose this game, it was going to be through R&D. And you were on Deep Data Mining, the big R&D pressure card, and you had your one copy in your discard pile. So all of a sudden, I'm queuing into the same old things. There was one turn where you were tagged, so I got to trash one of the same old things. I used the best defense on the other one to trash it, and I said, okay, there's only one more same old thing left in his deck, and if he mills it from his max ID, I'm going to be good. But instead, you drew it, then you played it, and then I lost.
that all happened. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just be over here with my store champ plaque. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
No, man, you earned it.
You got two of those suckers, if I'm not mistaken.
I got three of them.
Yeah.
Boy.
I wanted all four so I could use them as click trackers, but no such luck. Anyway, on the topic, yeah, the thing is, the corp also has to be aware of what Max's discard pile versus what he... The corp obviously doesn't have perfect information of what cards are left in Max's deck. They could probably make some general assumptions about what kind of cards are left in Max's deck. But
sure.
If I'm a corp and I'm facing off against Max, one of the first things that I have to clue in on is what breakers do they have available? Because Max doesn't really pre-install breakers the way that any other... I mean, Anarchs don't really do this at all, but... because Max is going to be putting those breakers in the bin faster than any other Anarch in the game, I have to be a little bit more aware at an earlier point about what breakers they have available.
Right. Well, that statement is going to stay true even after years from now when the Flashpoint cycle rotates and we don't have these heat breakers anymore. That's still going to be a true statement of Max, I think.
Right. Like, if I see same old thing on the board, I have to wonder, okay, what event could that possibly represent? And that's one of the cool things about Max, is that I can just put a same old thing on the board and it represents every single event that I have in my heap.
Yeah. And all of them are threatening because they're all these high-powered events.
Yeah, it's both Deep Data Mining, it's Legwork, it's Levy, all at the same time.
So why would I want to pick Max as my ID over something else instead of a Val or Ed Kim or something like that? What are her strengths and what are her weaknesses?
I think I've mentioned Max's raw speed just over the past few minutes, and I think that's the reason. That's generally what appeals to me about Max is just the raw speed and the set. It's not setup speed the way that like a Shaper or like a Haley Kaplan gives you setup speed where you're getting a bunch of installs all at the same time, but you get to play with your heap as kind of a second hand for a lot of, in a lot of aspects. You know, same old thing gives you access to all your events again. Your primary three breakers are accessible from the heap whenever you hit the ice of the proper type.
See, you're going deep on the theory here, and I would say the reason you play Max is just, I mean, she's like a punk rock chick with a mohawk with two middle fingers, man.
Well, there's that too. Let's not discount flavor here.
Before I even read her ability, I saw that ID card and was like, this is like my ID. Like, I'm going to play the hell out of this ID because she's badass, like way more than any other Anarch. Like, Valencia is just a journalist and she's probably better by raw numbers, but she's not cooler.
I agree that she's not cooler. I don't know. It's a toss up for me in terms of raw numbers who I'd rather play. I definitely prefer playing Max. I think for me, Max is also... I find Max kind of skill intensive to play too. Like I said, it took a total change in mindset for me to to understand what I was like, how I was approaching Max wrong in the past, and what do I need to do to get past any reservations I have.
Oh, I agree. I think like just the fact that you have to be more conscious of where different cards are and how you can access them, like, kind of elevates the skill ceiling, I guess.
Yeah, you can totally like just hose yourself and Max through wrong decisions the way that like in a way that you can't really do that in Val. I'm not saying Val is like foolproof, but in Max, like one bad same old thing use can totally just ruin the rest of the game for you. Hmm.
Yeah, I've had experiences with the deep data mining version that used to play Street Peddlers, where maybe I have 12 cards left in my deck and I play a Street Peddler and bam, it's like sure gamble levy and I'm never getting that levy back.
Yeah, shouts out to my Street Peddler against Graham that had Hacktivist inject against CTM.
You're like, I want those Hacktivists so bad, yeah, but I'm never going to get them.
I literally thought in my head, oh, we're mode now.
And see, like, sometimes that can happen totally randomly, but if you're 25 cards through your deck, you know, you could realistically have done the math and known that it might not have been a wise choice to play that Street Peddler.
Yeah, Max lets you fly by the seat of your pants a lot, and I find that really exciting and fun.
Yeah, I will say that the tempo style of Netrunner is my favorite kind, because it's all about making plays that just put your board state slightly ahead of your opponent. And so I think that aspect of Max would really appeal to me a lot, as opposed to the methodical, like, and I'm going to remove this win condition from your arsenal, and I'm going to remove this from your arsenal, and, you know, sort of, like, lock you out, like a real heavy glacier or, like, a prison-style deck, giant dad, that kind of thing.
Yeah. The other thing that really draws me to Max is, I mentioned her bluntness, or the fact that most Max decks tend to be pretty blunt in their approach. I'm awful at playing toolbox decks. Like, the more like tech cards I have to put in my deck, the worse I'm going to do with that deck. And with Max, your ID basically says you have a plan. You don't deviate from the plan. You don't have time for tech cards because you're not going to see them, idiot. So just play your game. And I like that. I like just kind of figuring out the matchup on my own rather than playing a one of corner case tech card that solves it for me.
I think that's kind of a good exercise. A lot of the Max decks that I've built are primarily 3x cards, kind of like what you mentioned earlier about building in redundancy.
Yeah.
And I mean, that fits right into the idea that you don't have room for these 1x cards, because unless it's like a 1x fem that you're going to, you know, get back with Retrieval Run or something that you actually have a plan for, it's kind of hard to actually have these tech cards that can be used at any given time when you would need them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like your chances are even lower of finding that 1x card than they are normally, because they could end up in the bin, and then you're like, well, now I don't have a Plascrete.
To quote the flavor text on Clone Chip, it's good practice to back up the backup.
Ooh.
Yeah, there you go.
That's topical. I like that. That's good. As Max, do you guys find that your matchups are really swingy, or that you get hosed heavily when you play against something like Scorpios that removes something from the game every turn, or Arc Lockdown where they can specifically target something that's in your discard pile?
Scorpios is basically just hard mode for Max, unless you play like Rebirth or Employee Strike in your deck and you happen to find it very early.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a huge problem, and it's also overstated. Because I think, like, I've played Max a fair amount against, like, competitive Scorpios decks, and I don't think it's, like, an auto loss like some people seem to say it is.
Yeah,
it's definitely not. It's not an auto loss, but it does make the game harder than it otherwise would be.
Yeah, that's true. But there's there's things you can do to kind of give yourself more of an edge that I think a lot of people forget about because they're just frustrated, like, oh, I'm just going to lose, and then they make careless plays, and they dig their own grave.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing, you got to, like, just not install your breakers from hand unless you absolutely need them, because that's the only way you're going to get them. Again, it's just understanding what your outs are in that matchup. With Scorpios, like, yeah, on paper, their ID ability kind of hard counters you. And if you mill the wrong cards, then, like, sometimes there's just nothing you can do about that. And Scorpios is just going to, you mill all your breakers, they remove them from the game, and that's just the end of it.
I've had some situations playing Max against Scorpios where, you know, I'll flip the top two cards in my deck and there's a paperclip or whatever, so they shoot it. And like, it would spell game over, but now you have four clicks that you can dig as frantically as you want. Like, you can play your injects now because they've already used their trigger.
Right.
And I've had games where I've played inject, 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 and just dropped everything in the trash and then ran somewhere because, you know, they blew their opportunity.
Right.
Foolproof, but it's an answer that I think people kind of maybe don't necessarily, like, latch on to.
That's actually a really good point. They only get one Scorpios trigger a turn, so you're kind of playing this really weird game of chicken with Scorpios.
Yeah.
Where, like, okay, I milled Black Orchestra and Inject. Do you want these? Yes or no, because I'm holding another Inject in hand. So if you remove this card, I'm going to trash everything. And you can't remove any of those.
Counterplay. I mean,
between things like those plays, and if you're running things like Street Peddler, like, there's other ways to kind of try to get your breakers to a safe spot, either like in your hand or on the table somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's again, being conscious of where your cards are, basically, and understanding, like, the least safe place for them is actually now in the heap, which can sometimes be a problem, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes you actually draw your breakers the hard way, which in almost any other matchup you don't want to do, but in Scorpios, that's actually the best place for them.
Yeah. So, as a closing statement about Max, what would you guys tell a new player in your local game store when they are trying out their Max deck for the first time?
I mean, essentially just keep the pressure up and keep your tempo up as much as you can. You know, be forcing the Corp to res mm-hmm. ice. Your power is so front-loaded in the early game that you normally don't want it to go long. One with the data foldings is kind of an exception to that because it actually does have a really strong late game. But the majority of Max decks are kind of like a candle being burnt at both ends.
So. Right, right. A tip that I gave a player at my store a while back was, who was really struggling with Max, was like, don't look at your discard pile. Like, just turn the card, like, mill the cards, but just turn them face down. Because the more you think about what cards you don't have, the more you won't focus on the cards that you do. So you'll think about all the outs you don't have instead of figuring out, like, what is my game plan with the cards that I do have access to.
That's good. That's good advice. Well, guys, I'm excited. I'm gonna try playing a Max deck here sometime. My favorite, I think, deck name, or one of my favorite deck names of all time, was Mad Max Fury Road, which is...
Oh, shout outs to Osher.
As we all know, that is the Apocalypse Max deck, which I think Apocalypse...
Netrunner history.
Yeah, it's important.
It is up there. Like, I love Keyhole. I miss it dearly. And that deck played Keyhole just as good as any other deck, if not better.
Did you guys see that Raja brought a new Apocalypse Max Fury Road version to...
I did. I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it right now, and brought a tear to my eye.
there's no Keyhole. It doesn't. It does do deep data mining for R&D pressure instead, but it has influence on two Apocalypse, a deep data mining, and Levy. So, like, not a lot of wiggle room there.
Good though.
I think
I don't see anything wrong with it. It seems good.
It seems good. I think Apocalypse works in Max because with Max, you're not afraid to have any of your stuff in the bin anyway. So when you Apocalypse and you flip a bunch of your cards face down, like, you don't really care because you weren't planning on using those cards anyway.
I think, like, when it comes to these Apocalypse Max decks, you're talking about, like, a whole nother ball game. Like, Apocalypse is its own mindset. You just kind of have to engineer that, you know, all three centrals turn with a click to spend on Apocalypse, and you end up, you might be setting that up for 5-6 turns in advance.
Right.
Yeah, I actually maintain Apocalypse Anarch is, like, stealth broken right now. Two of the store champs I won this season were with Apocalypse Ed Kim.
Yeah.
And there's their deck, their corp deck that, like, they get Apocalypse and the game is over. Like, they can't win now. Like, the Architects of Tomorrow decks with Jinja. Oh, yeah, great. You have a 60 promote server? Yeah, I'm going to blow that up with Apocalypse. Now what?
Plus,
like, I don't care.
It's even worse. Like, they leave HQ unprotected or something because a Jinja on R&D and a Jinja on the other remote.
They got one ice on the centrals. Yeah, miss me with that remote. I don't care.
It's kind of a funny point, too. I don't remember where I heard this. I want to say it was actually on your last podcast, Graham, with Greg.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned how Katara has kind of install double advance plays, a lot more 5/3s.
Yeah.
And things of that nature. And I think that just strengthens the argument for Apocalypse because you end up in a lot of situations where maybe they'll something behind this huge wall of ice, and now not only are you going to apocalypse them, but they also invested this effort in trying to score a 5-3 that you're going to completely undo, and you're going to go take it.
and even if it's like one of those defensive 5-3s, like, it's fine.
More and more situations, it's like if people are playing real three-pointers, you might only need three accesses to win. So if you apocalypse them, you know, single accesses, it might just win you the game if you do it when they're trying to score.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the past, Apocalypse would have said the natural enemy of Jackson Howard because they can just shuffle the ice back in. But there's a lot of decks right now that don't play any, they don't play preemptive action. So that ice that hits the bin, it's gone. They can't get it back ever. And that's just amazing right there. If I can get like six ice off the board with an Apocalypse, like, most Glacier decks are running 17, 18 ice. That's a third of their ice in the deck. And then you think about, okay, now they're down to two-thirds of the ice that they will ever have access to. What about Apocalypse number two? What's that going to do to them? How much ice is that going to leave them with? Like, how do they score now? Paper. That's why I think Apocalypse is just, like, secretly broken and no one even knows it right now.
Guys, regional season is coming up.
Your Kim deck had all three Apocalypse, right?
All three and same old thing?
No one expects the third.
And it had amped up, so it could technically Apocalypse with a same old.
Yeah, the first Apocalypse is good. The second one's great. If the third one, like, if you haven't won by now, like, that will win you the game, the third one.
So, you heard it here first on Shipment from Shiloh. This regional season, going to be a lot of Apocalypse out there. So, pack your preemptives.
Pack your Chrissy-ups, really.
Yeah. I mean,
this is really bad for Apocalypse decks. And it's probably going to make a comeback when Diversion of Funds comes out.
Probably.
Because that was the primary Chrysium target.
Upgrade on HQ? It's probably Chrysium.
Any more, like, you might splash a Chrysium if you're worried about indexing or something, but I think most people would rather play Miraju for that, so...
Yeah. But deep data mining also works against
Chrysium. I think Chrysium's underplayed right now. I think there's a lot of enough run events that are running around that it's pretty good. Legwork, DDM, indexing.
Chrysium Grid is a region upgrade that runs on that server don't count as successful for the purposes of card effects. So stuff like Apocalypse, where you need to make these central runs in order to trigger the Apocalypse condition, can't do it. Deep data mining says, make a run on R&D, if successful, access additional cards. Doesn't work.
Yeah, basically, anything that says if successful or if unsuccessful, it doesn't work.
Right.
Without that many kind of high-impact run events that aren't multi-access, I think people are less concerned.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that was our meta prediction for the summer, so you're welcome for that. But guys, I've got another topic to talk about.
Uh-oh
is right. So there's another thing that I need some help with, and I think some newer players would really benefit from this too. So we're going to talk all about Clot in our next segment, Levy University. So, guys, there's a term called Clot Lock, which is where you use Clot a lot, and then you stop the court from doing stuff. For listeners that don't know, Clot is a virus program that says the corp cannot score an agenda on the same turn that he or she installed it. Trash clot if the corp purges virus counters. So, this is a silver bullet against fast advance strategies, which the definition of fast advance is scoring an agenda the same turn you install it. So, obviously good against the hostile takeover that you can just score, boom, two costs to get it out. Also good against something like Project Beale with a Psychographics, or you got the Brain Trusts with a Shipment from Tenons, or maybe you've got even more elaborate things like Biotic Labors combined with a Red Planet Couriers, and you just fast advance in the government takeovers. Clot takes care of it all. So, my question for you is, can you describe for me the back and forth that Clot creates?
First thing you have to have in order for it to even be relevant is some kind of paid ability thing that's going to let you get an install. So the most common one is going to be self-modifying code.
Yeah.
Credits to search your stack. I'm sure your listeners are familiar by now. but you know, to tutor out a program at a paid ability speed so that you can do it during your opponent's turn. People don't really play Clot if they're not planning on doing something like that.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be SMC. It can be Street Peddler. It can be a Haley trigger that triggers off of something else. It can be Artist Colony, but it has to be some way to get that in at instant speed before it's even relevant.
Right. Because Clot's, if you just install it, then the corp can purge instead of trying to fast advance their agenda, and now you've gotten rid of the Clot and you got nothing.
Clot's actually interesting, not because of what it does on the board, but because like what the threat of it does. Clot in and of itself is pretty innocuous, but if I'm a corp that where my game plan involves around scoring from out of hand, fast advancing an agenda, I have to be able to read the board state and understand, like, okay, if he has Clot, can he get it? First of all, can he stop me from scoring this? And if he can he score this agenda? Is it safe to even try this? Because if I leave it on the board, can he just come in and get it?
Right. If you're like, cool, I'm going to use this Trick of Light on my Project Atlas, then do you install the Atlas in like just a naked remote? Because you're like, it's fine, I'm going to score this out. And then they pull up a Clot after you advance it once, after your second click, and you're like, oh shit, now what did I do? Do I just leave it? I guess. And then they come and steal it. So, you know, do you read the board and put it into your scoring remote anyway? Probably.
I think it's interesting too. Like, Clot, it requires you to understand some of the more complex things about paid ability windows. Like,
you kind of have to know when the last possible opportunity to Clot them is. And that's kind of the sub game also with, from a core perspective, is like, can I trick them into either not playing Clot when they should have? Like, do I have some way to sneak out at more advancement counters in the same window than the runner can deal with? Or can I get them to go find the Clot when I actually wasn't going to score this agenda at all?
Yeah.
Actually, to that point, I just want to bring this up if your listeners haven't seen it, but the game from Worlds of this year, so Worlds 2017, the finals game where Wilfie was playing HB, there is some like really high level Clot play, and I would recommend that to anyone who like maybe doesn't understand.
Sure. He's using an MCA austerity policy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think that was it. Clicks. I think he was advancing a reversed accounts, which is an asset that takes money away from the runner. But he or did the MCA or something to get a bunch of clicks, so it really threatened to score, and he baited out a Clot and then like took away all of his opponent's money, and it was like the blowout turn of the century.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. It's really interesting. And they only got to that point because they had played so many games of like standard Clot where I want to put it in the corpse perspective. If you can, you know, like on your turn, let's say I've got a Trick of Light and an Atlas because Titan is a thing, and also those are both in the new core set. So you install, click one, your Atlas in your scoring remote. Click two, you advance it. Now, what you're threatening to do on your click three, right, is to play that Trick of Light and move two counters from somewhere else. So essentially you're getting two advancements for one click. You put them both on the Atlas, and then it's your turn, so you get to choose you get to use any paid abilities that you want to before the runner can do anything. So in that, immediately after you play that Trick of Light, you can score it out. And so that's why the runner's got to think ahead of like, okay, if they play a fast advance card next, do I, like, I have to be able to pull the Clot out now. And things got really screwy in that game because he's using MCA austerity policy, which you just pop that and gain like four clicks. So then all of a sudden it's like, is he going to fast advance a Vitruvius with some clicks left over? Is he going to try to score out this 5-3? And then he baits it with the reversed accounts, which is just an advanceable asset. It's not even an agenda. It's crazy. It's wild.
Yeah, the other thing to think about from a core perspective is not like, can I bait them into using Clot, or can I, is this even an agenda? Can I trick them into not getting the Clot? It's also, can I purge? Because Clot, on the face of it, without any other cards that prevent it from leaving the board, just goes away when there's a purge virus counter. So There's two, generally two ways to do it. You can either somehow get enough clicks to just purge the hard way with three clicks.
Yeah.
But the more common thing to do is include CyberNext Virus Suite.
Right. Which is an upgrade that lets you, you know, like you can res and trash the upgrade to purge virus counters. And that's important to know because you can res and trash it during the runner's turn. You can res and trash it between clicks in response to them pulling out this clot, which is kind of what Andrew's talking about, but you can do it at instant speed as well.
Right. So a lot of times in like a traditional fast advanced deck, you have to stick I'm going to call it CVS. I'm not going to say CyberDeck every time, but
yeah, please.
You have to have the CVS kind of stuck on the board somewhere. So you can, it's interesting because it's an upgrade. So you can stick it on a central and kind of bait it as like, we were talking about Chrysium Grid earlier. That's a good bluff for it, is you can bluff it as a Chrysium Grid. You could jam it into a remote server that they have to come run at. Maybe it's an asset. They don't know that it's a CVS. Or this is a real corner case, but Cerebral Imaging used to do it a lot. You have to have a way to install both the agenda that you want to score and the CyberNext Virus Suite at the same time. So like shipment from Mirror Morph was the way that Cerebral Imaging would do it.
Sure, sure.
Big corner case, but it does happen.
And it pops up whenever like a CI Fast Advanced deck shows up.
So. Right, which is basically every CI deck these days.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think just because Clot exists, pretty much any deck that relies heavily on Fast Advance is normally packing some kind of answer to Clot.
Mm-hmm.
CVS, yeah. I mean, lately we just got Reverse Infection, which, I mean, it's not great, but we haven't really seen a lot of people testing it either. So.
Right. I don't think Reverse Infection necessarily solves Clot because it doesn't happen at instant speed. It's got the same problem that, like, an old card like CyberNext Trial did.
Right.
But reverse infection is more like, just in case these virus virus decks get too good, like decks revolving around like Imp, Gravedigger, Friday Chip, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you could like combine it with a biotic effect though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like they cheat out the clot, so then your last click is biotic, reverse infection to clear the clot, and then last click your fast advance card. So maybe. I don't know. We haven't seen it yet, but that could happen.
Yeah. I mean, efficiency committee is another one. Like, that'd be an easy way to kind of get an extra click.
Yeah.
Right, or three extra clicks.
So you can just straight up.
I mean,
purge.
I guess that's true. You could just. Probably doesn't make much sense then.
That's wild. So if you are the runner and you've got this clot and you know that they might have a CyberDex virus suite, what's a card that you would have then in your deck to combat that?
Sacrificial Construct is the one that most people are going to put in their decks. And you might be wondering, why does that work? Well, Sacrificial Construct, it doesn't... Because trashing is not a cost. You can't prevent cost. So anything before that, you've probably seen cost where they have that the cost and then a colon. That's not why Clot trashes itself. It trashes itself just as part of an effect. So you can actually use Sacrificial Construct to quote-unquote save Clot when the court purges.
Right.
Which is a huge deal because now if I've got Sacrificial Construct and Clot, the Corp has to find a way to purge twice if they want to fast advance this agenda, which is not impossible, but it's a lot harder than purging once.
Right. You need a lot of extra clicks, or you need multiple CyberNext virus clicks.
Or a lot of CVSs.
I was trying to play Titan earlier this winter, like right after Worlds or whatever. And so everyone, a common deck was Shaper with three Sacrificial Constructs, and because they were still running Tapeworm, and they'd have a clot in there too. And I'm trying to do this fast advanced deck, so I would put three CyberDex Virus Suites and three Best Defense into my stupid Titan fast advanced deck, so I could try to like snipe the Sacrificial Constructs with the Best Defense, because Best Defense can trash a zero cost card that the runner has. And then you get them down to, like, as few Sacrificial Constructs as possible. And then I would try to, like, have two CVS down. And it was, I mean, it was an uphill battle. It didn't work. The short answer is it didn't work, but I tried.
In a situation like that, you kind of have to accept that, like, basically you're normally going to see Clot and Shaper, and you're going to see it as a one-of. Like, it's pretty rare for them to run multiple Clots. So if you find yourself in that situation, sometimes you just have to give them the agenda and like use that to get the clot on the table so you can just purge three turns in a row.
Right. Yeah, my
easy decision. But it's one of those like long-winded, you know, chess strategy type things. You have to see like the next several turns and if that's viable.
Yeah. My ultimate strategy was to put in Arc Lockdown And so then I would get clot in the bin, ultimately, either through purging it or whatever. And then I would arc it before I tried to fast advance again and remove it from the game.
Right. Most of the time, clot's not played as a multiple. It's a one of. It's what we were talking about. That card, it just solves one matchup, and that's the fast advance matchup. So there's no point in having redundancy because that card in and of itself fixes the matchup.
Right.
And you can, and if you're Shaper, you can just get it on demand with SMC or Artist Colony or whatever you want.
Right. Sometimes clone ship if it's in the bin already. Yeah.
Right.
So then my final question here is looking to the future. Clot is going to rotate in probably about a year, maybe less. So what are we going to do when it rotates? Do we need
Source.
some kind of the source?
Dude, I love the Source.
Source is good.
The Source is a sneaky good card, and especially in like Geist when you're already playing Fall Guys.
Unless FFG pulls a fast one on it. Oh, well, I guess that's is that Lunar Cycle or is
No, it's
that
Creation Control, baby.
sources?
Evergreen.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I thought it was Evergreen. So there's a pack called the Source, and it's
Yeah,
not in that pack.
no, but
not the
Earthrise
Source,
Hotel
the
is.
pack, but the card. Yeah, so the Source increases the advancement cost of agendas by one, but then there's a bunch of machinations that you got to do to keep it on the table and, not pay an arm and a leg to steal agendas and stuff.
I
So.
th I think that's kind of what clot, what anti fast advance is going to look like once clot rotates. I think it kind of feels like FFG. A card like clot gets the phrase silver bullet slapped onto it. And what I mean by silver bullet is it's a card that in some matchups does absolutely nothing, but in one particular matchup or one or a small number of particular matchups, you just win for free. It's just a silver bullet that takes down the corporation because it neuters their whole strategy. Lucas loved silver bullets. I can't fathom why. But it doesn't feel like Michael Boggs does. Michael Boggs and even Damon seem to prefer kind of designing ideas rather than solutions. So I think we're going to
Interesting.
see cards more akin to the Source, where it doesn't say fast advance loses, but it says fast advance just has to work harder now, or they don't inherently lose, but this effect is temporary, or it's a lot harder. You have to build your deck around it. We're gonna see cards like the Source. We might see something even like Traffic Jam.
Yeah.
Cards, not exactly those cards, but cards similar to that.
I think Lucas saw the silver bullet thing as sort of like a strength of the living card game idea, where if everyone has access to a card that just hoses a strategy, if that one strategy becomes too good, then everyone's just going to slot the hate cards against it. But in
Right,
reality, deck slots are just way too tight and
yeah.
hurt your deck a whole lot by.
I hate to use the comparison, but I have a Magic the Gathering background a little bit, and
Boo.
yeah, okay, fine.
I'm just kidding.
In that game, they get the phrase sideboard. In that game, you get you're playing best of three, and between games, you have 15 cards that you can swap in and out freely with the cards in your main deck.
Yeah.
So if you're playing these silver bullet cards work a little bit better in that game because you don't have to have them in your deck unless you actually need them in the particular matchup you're in.
Right.
In Netrunner, we don't have that. That concept of a sideboard or cards that I don't have to play but I can kind of have access to, that doesn't exist. So if I'm going to play a silver bullet, I got to have it no matter if I need it or not.
Right. And if I guessed wrong on the silver bullet, then my deck is it just has a dead card in it.
Right.
Which really means that I can't afford to have more than like one or two of these really niche silver bullets, because otherwise my deck is just perpetually going to be kind of crappy.
Or I'm playing a Shaper deck that has 10 real cards in it and like 30 silver bullets in it.
I mean, that's one way to go. Then you got all your bases covered.
Right.
I'm gonna belabor this point because I know other people have said this in like lengthy articles on StimHack and stuff, but there's also the argument that corporations, like by default, have less room for silver bullet type cards because they already have to include 20 points of agendas
Absolutely.
and they have to include ice. And before
Yeah,
longer,
you don't have to include ice.
okay, fine. I mean, if you're playing like IG or something and you're trying
Yeah,
to just like,
now we're talking.
Gross.
I mean, just
I'm just
generally
kidding.
speaking, like, you just, I mean, you might have room for the one silver bullet that, like, you have to have, like we were talking about cyber decks. If you're a fast advanced deck, you probably slot one.
Right.
But like, I think just hearing what you had to say about running like three best defense and three cyber decks,
Your deck is just a
going,
bad meta call at that point. Like, you
yeah, I'm
can't make
going
it
like,
work. Right. And
play like the opposite of that deck that doesn't need those cards, and you'll do a lot better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's interesting is like cyber decks. We're using cyber decks as a corp example. I actually think cyber decks is relatively broad in terms of application because there's a lot of decks to play viruses. Obviously, Anarch does. I mean, you can purge out like data suckers, and now we've got Almakua, which is a really powerful breaker that also happens to be a virus.
Yeah,
you can purge that out at instant speed when they thought they could break something. Mm. Obviously, Clot that we've been talking about. But like you never see corpse playing cards like signal jamming that exists to stop like one card,
right?
Or like very rarely you'll see someone play like underway grid just to stop the bypass expose meta. So those are the kind of silver bullets. Like, yeah, corpse don't play those because they can't. Their game plan has to be you don't really get a 49 card deck in corp, and you have so many things that you're kind of obligated to include that you just don't have time to be messing around with no tech cards.
Right. So if you guys were going to make a replacement for Clot, what would it look like?
It looks like the source. Next topic. No, I'm just kidding.
Great. Sounds, I'm just kidding. I'm convinced. It's fine.
I really do sincerely love the source. The source, it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't say that Fast Advance loses, but it just says Fast Advance has to work a lot harder. And if they do work a lot harder and the runner can't actually stop them with this card, then it really doesn't do anything because the source trashes itself on the face of it.
Right.
I'm going to throw another one out at you that I think is a cool Fast Advance answer, and that's maybe not this card specifically, but design like it, and that's the Price of Freedom.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
From advancing cards on their next turn. I think that's a interesting way to say, you know, the corpse at 5 points, and you probably know they have Biotic Project Atlas or whatever, but it buys you a turn. And sometimes that's all you need. So I think that's kind of a cool way to do it that's not maybe as weird as Clot.
Yeah. The thing about Clot is that it is kind of instant speed. So, like, the problem with Price of Freedom is that if they're doing pure Fast Advance, like, you don't know necessarily when they're going to do it most of the time. Sometimes you kind of have a pretty strong inkling that they're about to Fast Advance a card. So I think the cost of Price of Freedom, of like trashing one of your own cards, is probably a little bit too high to go against Fast Advance, but just that clause of like, you can't advance cards next turn.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not saying that that's like the best card. I mean, you rarely ever see it, but I think that the design space around it is an interesting way to deal with Fast Advance, especially because, like you said, you, as the runner, you're basically saying, like, I bet that you have it and you're going to do it next turn unless I stop you. And that's like a, you know, it's a skill decision.
Yeah. Clot just says no, whereas something like the Source or any of these other cards says, I bet you can't do it.
Right. Which is a little bit softer and a little bit more subtle, and I do think that is the direction that Michael Boggs likes to go with cards. It's a little bit broader, a little bit more subtle, not quite so in-your-face, screw this strategy over.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just thought of as the Black File. That's another...
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Where the corp...
Okay, so the corp can't win for X turns.
Right.
Unless they kill you. So it's not like... There are totally some Fast Advanced decks that have a kill route, too. Like... a lot of Titan Fast Advanced decks play hard-hitting boom. So, yeah, you get the Black File out, but if you make a run that you shouldn't have made, they can still play hard-hitting and they can still kill you.
Right.
Black File or no. So that's an interesting one, too. Plus, even if they don't have a kill package, the Black File, I don't love limit one per game, but you do need a way to limit that card with that text on it. But the point is that it removes itself from the game once it's done. It doesn't just stay there and like color the rest of the game. You're still on a clock.
Right.
And I think that's probably the most important thing about any of this is that, like, these cards have natural kind of counterplay, which, to Clot's credit, like, at least you can purge it.
Yeah.
Now, when you throw in, like, triple SatCon and getting it at instant speed, it starts to get a little messy because now you, like, have to give them an agenda to force them to pull it, and you got to give them 3 turns, which is why Tapworm got restricted, because nobody likes to just give up 3 turns.
I think at the end of the day, Fast Advance is actually in a pretty fair spot in the game right now. Like, it's not as easy as it was with Astroscript, but it's not impossible either. You can totally still build a Fast Advance deck.
Yeah,
it's just you got to work a little bit harder. You're a little bit more open to RNG, Just the bad luck, for lack of a better phrase. I think I'd want to make rather anti-fast advance kind of the same way. I don't want it to be too easy, but I don't want it to be impossible to stop either. I think a little bit of fast advance goes a long way for the health of this game.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think that fast advance was probably the most interesting, in my opinion, when it was a sort of like secondary plan for decks like Food Coats, where maybe they're going to score 5 points the hard way and then try to fast advance the last two to close a game.
Yeah, I agree.
My deck just spits out points as fast as possible.
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of they put scoring out of a remote as like the end all be all of Netrunner. But if Netrunner was just scoring out of a remote, then you'd never have a reason to run a central. And fast advance, understanding that you're up against fast advance, kind of means like I got to run centrals because I can't score out of a remote very reliably.
Right.
Definitely.
So I think it just makes the game more interesting. It just opens up the possible routes that the runner has to take to win. And if there's anti-fast advance, then it kind of opens up the different routes that a court might have to take to win. So it's kind of like a yin and yang sort of thing.
Yeah. And Michael Boggs has cited that that's why he kept in the 3-for-2s from the Genesis cycle, by putting them into the revised core set, because 3-for-2s are like gold for fast advance. You only need one fast advance tool, and they're worth 2 points, so that can add up pretty fast. But he only put in those 3-2s. He took out the other ones, the Astros and the accelerated beta tests, because if all you do is fast advance, then the runner doesn't have enough ways to interact. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a very shrewd decision on his point to keep in a little bit of fast advance to keep the game really interesting without it being a very dominant strategy.
Yeah, and all the other 3-for-2s, by the way, have some form of a drawback. Like Philotic Entanglement is 1 per deck. Mm-hmm. Merger counts for an additional agenda point if the runner steals it, and it's an influence. Medical Breakthrough is only the second one's a 3-2, so they get you got to get one out of the game before the other two get good.
Right.
The third one's a 2-2, man.
The third one is a 2-2. Yeah, I've actually never seen a 2-2 medical breakthrough.
I scored one last night in four years
of playing this game. I've never seen one. So shouts out, man. That's awesome.
You have not played Political Dealings IG, my friend, because
I have not. No, no, I have not played that. I prefer my IG much more. Is that a word? Murderier?
Murderier?
I don't know, but it is now. I just said it.
I'll allow it. My dudes, I have a game for you. I'm stealing it from the Brits, which makes it even better. It's called Calling in Flavors.
Much like our country, it's stolen from... Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Too soon. Too soon, Andrew. It was 250 years ago. It's too soon. Yeah, I stole it from Neo Reading Grid. Listener, if you haven't checked them out, they're one of my favorite Netrunner podcasts. Specifically, Dead Channel is the name of their cast. Neo Reading Grid is the name of their, I guess, website? Blog?
Sure. YouTube channel? I don't know.
Yeah, it's the brand. But the game is called Calling in Flavors. And guys, I'm going to read to you a flavor text of a card. And you guys have to guess what the card is based on that flavor text.
This is good. I love flavor text. I'm very excited for this.
I'm gonna be bad, but I'm gonna close my Netrunner DB browser so I can't cheat.
As will I. I'm closing.
Yeah,
all
that's
my,
right.
I'm closing all my tabs here.
No cheating here, guys. Come on. And the theme today is cards that are associated with Max.
I might be okay at this. Maybe.
I know. We gotta keep it in theme here, right? Not like only found in Max, but I think most Max decks are going to use these cards. So that is our category.
Okay, I'm ready.
So the first one's an easy one. I got to get us warmed up, right? So the flavor text is, spend too much time in the AR lab, and someone might notice, unless you're the head of it, that is.
The old Levy.
Levy AR, lab access. Yeah, I gotta keep it easy to start.
Classic. Right? Classic.
Classic. All right. The human brain only uses like a quarter of its capacity anyway, right? Quote, Max.
Jordan, do you know this one?
I'm going to say it's probably Amped Up.
It is Amped Up.
It's Amped Up. You guys got it. Ding, ding, ding. All right, here's the next one. These things are always there under the surface, but no one wants to know the truth. Quote, Omar Kuhn. the flash.
That's one of the bin breakers. I just can't remember which one. So I don't think it's Paperclip, so I'm gonna guess from the other two. I'm gonna go with Black Orchestra.
The MK Ultra to be different.
Yeah.
I know one of them is like in something your conscience may make you terrible, and I don't remember which one that one is either. But I know it's a bin breaker.
If it's your consciousness, that's probably related to MK Ultra.
Yeah, I got a hunch it's Black Orchestra, and I can't verbalize why.
I mean, you're my KOS partner, so this is like when I trusted you on those side games.
On side games, yeah, baby. We're good on those, so I think it's Black Orchestra.
The correct answer is MK Ultra.
Shit. Okay, well. Stick and move.
Stick and move is right. I think because MK Ultra is all about, psychokinetic powers or whatever, like reading minds and stuff.
Right.
In the CIA giving like LSD to homeless people.
That's the one.
In my defense, MK Ultra is the bin breaker I install the least often, so I have the least like opportunity to read that flavor text. But so that's my excuse. That's why I missed it.
That's fair. I'll allow it. All right, here's the next one. It's easier to spend when it's not your money.
Oh,
liberated account.
Yeah, it's your liberated account.
Yeah,
right?
Jordan's got it. You guys both got it. Nice. I figure that one's, I mean, that's like all anarchs, but at the same time, like, when is Max not going to rent liberated, you know?
Right. That could have been the flavor text for Siphon, too. A first draft flavor text for Siphon.
That would have been good. Okay, here's a neat one. Omar goes through 4 or 5 keyboards per week. No two from the same decade.
To coding.
Yeah, the old frantic coding.
Frantic coding. You guys remember Frantic Max?
Yeah.
You know, you guys like invent Frantic Max?
That was the big boy, I believe, who was playing a lot of Frantic Max. But yeah, back when Magnum Opus wasn't restricted, you could play that as your entire econ package.
Yeah, right. When that deck had access to Levy as well as Magnum Opus, it was very strong.
I mean, and Vamp, too. Like, I remember playing an iteration of that, which was you get Opus on turn one, you click it 10 million times, and then you just Vamp all their money and win eventually.
All right, I got another card.
All right.
Knowledge comes in many different shapes and sizes. Quote, Quetzal.
That's inject.
Woo! Sun noses. You see, you've been playing with the real inject and not the full bleed inject, because they take the flavor text off of the full bleeds.
They do. You also have to call it, by the way, it's canon to refer to that card as inject.
Inject?
It's a soft J. Shoutouts to CTZ.
Alright. Just me, a cup of Yucca Bean, and last night's Hong Kong truck sniffed packets. I call that a good morning.
Same old thing, right?
You got it, dog.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
For whatever reason, the Yucca Bean part sticks out to me. I care about the Hong Kong truck thing, but man, you guys are just hosing me this round. This is wild. Here's another one. It's not wise to call someone crazy until you fully understand what they're trying to say. Quote, Omar.
And this is a common Max card?
Definitely a common Max card.
It is. I know this one. I just want to torture you.
I will say it's not strictly a Max card.
Man, that's... I don't know. I'm stumped on that one.
Here, I'll give you a hint. Think of cards with really awkward art.
Like, all I'm thinking of because of, like, the context of that is, like, political graffiti.
Nah,
that's not right.
That doesn't have flavor text. It's Paperclip, my friend.
Yeah. I only use the full bleed one.
Well, the full bleed one probably is the most awkward art.
I mean, there's some awkward art out there, and most of it's all done by the same guy. But this
one's more awkward than a George O'Keefe painting.
It's done by Donald Crank. That's where all the awkward art is in this game.
Yeah. Paperclip is actually an Adam S. Doyle original. But
oh, is that? I thought that was... No, Inversificator is Donald Crank.
Inversificator, right. Echo Chamber, Shadownet. That's all a Crank. And they're all gross.
As a guy with Crank in his handle, I don't know that I'm comfortable with Donald Crank as artwork.
I mean, his name is Crank, and everything looks like a freaking vagina. I don't get it.
It really does. Like, there's a... Like, Freud would have a field day with Donald Crank.
Oh, my God.
And I'll leave it at that.
All right, last one. This one's actually really tricky. So you better have your A game on.
All right.
All right, the last one is, hello, thank you for vidding Megaby. I'm Carol. How can I help you?
Day job.
Yeah, this is called me IRL, the card.
It is you. It is your job. Tech support.
Yeah. It's day job.
But let's be real. Like, that's one of the all-time great Netrunner cards in terms of, like, art and flavor and mechanics. Yeah, it's all there.
It's like top three, possibly just top art in the game.
Yeah. I don't care what anyone says about that new one, because I can.
I gotta say that my favorite thing about day job is that I feel like more than any other card in this game, it gives you a lot of context as to what the credits are representing. Like, it gives you a sense that a click is roughly a quarter of an 8-hour shift, so every click is roughly 2 hours.
I will say, I've always found it odd that you can play day job while tagged. That never made any sense to me. Like, if you're like back in old Siphon Max decks, and you can sit there and just steal the corpse money forever, you're like a nationally known cyber criminal, but yet your job still lets you come and clock in. Like, that's weird.
That's a little bit weird.
I guarantee you, I'm not gonna say where I work, but if I was a cyber criminal, I guarantee I would be fired so quickly that my head would spin.
Well, how would they know what your handle is, though?
I guess, but I've always thought that, like, when you're tagged, like, your picture's everywhere.
Right, like, people know who you are.
Like, I read, if you've read the little novella that does a lot of, by Lee Alexander about NBN Monitor, like,
yeah,
they're everywhere, like, their faces are everywhere, so they can't hide.
Right.
Actually, whoa, that's a weird connection. Max is in that, oh my god, shut
Max
it down.
Max is in that book. I was just gonna bring that up. Dude.
Maybe the tag is that they know where you work, but they don't know who you are.
So they like accidentally get your manager. That'd be hilarious.
Well, I mean, if they scorch earth the building, like,
that's true.
Probably kill, like, you too,
right?
Boom! Just blow up the whole block. That's,
yeah,
fine.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, it kind of fits if they don't know specifically who you are, but they know that, you know, your IP address when you were hacking came from that building,
right?
Dude, the themes, guys, the themes—they all just. The flavor just all, it just feels so good.
The best things about Netrunner, right? It's like, yeah, one of the only card games that's not just like a dude basher.
Right.
Like, there's something very real and like narrative happening in every turn.
I play L5R in addition to Netrunner a little bit. And ugh, like, well, the thing is, like, no game captures like theme meets mechanics better than Netrunner. Like, it's just, it's so perfect in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, everything makes a certain amount of logical sense in universe, like, pretty much every action. In, like, L5R, like, now you can have, like, a giant phoenix in a policy debate against a samurai, and it just kind of gets weird on a certain level.
Yeah.
I have a favorite flavor interaction in Netrunner.
Yeah, share it.
Favorite is, it's not in the game anymore because Cotty Jones rotated, but if Cotty Jones was hit with an MCA informant, that is, she was working with the police to bring you down, like, she was working with the corpse, drug money, and you call her to your house to take it off, then you can't shake that tag.
Because she's got, like, the bug on her or whatever.
Like, it's this weird thing where, because Cotty Jones was, like, it said that you could only use her once a turn, and MCA adds the ability to her.
Right.
You take the money, then you lead them right to you, which is just really flavorful in a way that I'm not even sure that they actually intended.
It's so good, though. It's so good.
Yeah, even the little ones, like, I love that we have a card called Trojan Horse now. Like, it hits a little too close to home in a way.
And like, the wording on Trojan Horse is not like, the runner made a successful run. It's runner successfully accessed a card.
Which makes it like four times more awesome because it makes it kind of realistic. It makes it realistic in that regard, right? Oh, that agenda you accessed last turn? Yeah, guess what? Now it's a virus.
And I'm trashing your programs.
Goodbye to your money printing program.
It's genius. Also, I have been wanting to bring this up on my podcast. It has nothing to do with anything we've been talking about. But did you guys catch the new bank job art in, like, the revised core set?
Yeah, Gabe counting his money.
So the original bank job is like Gabe hacking into a bank, i.e. doing a bank job.
Oh, it's part two!
But now he's working, like, he's got, like, the Titan Transnational, like, logo or something on that card, I think.
Yeah.
So he's, like, working at the bank. He has a job at a bank. Like, that is like, what
the
new...
Oh, that's not how I interpret it. I interpret it as, like, oh, I didn't even put that together. I thought it was Gabe hacked a bank, and now he's counting his money from hacking the bank.
Oh, maybe. He's, like shaking hands with
someone. Like, part one, part two.
Which is, I mean, both is really legit.
Right.
Oh, I got that card right here. I'm going to look at it. This is the worst format to be talking about freaking visuals. on his coat, like on his overshirt, yeah. He's got that. A little Titan logo on there. And he's like in some cush building, right? And working with some rich ass lady. I'm telling you guys, the flavors, they're so good. All right, my dudes, I'm out of shit to talk about.
Good enough for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, pack it up, boys.
Well, let's get out of here. So, Andrew, Jordan, guys, thanks so much for joining me today.
Of course, man. Anytime.
No problem.
You can find us at least twice a month at shipmentfromshiloh.podomatic.com. You can always shoot me a tweet at GrahamCrackerGo or find me on the internet because my username on all things Netrunner is PureFlight. Thanks to Foundation for the amazing theme music and thanks to you for listening in. Y'all, that's our show. This is Graham Carlson signing off for the night. Stay safe, New Angeles, and join us next time on Shipment from Shiloh.
Nice.
Train in the background.
've had some situations. Oh, sorry, it's the train.
It's the Astro train. Choo-choo.
Choo-choo, but, motherfucker.
I'm in the janky, like, browser-based version.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That might explain some
things. This guy.
This clown.
Well, I'm on Rose's Mac, and it didn't want to download the full client or That's app fair. Or whatever.
Oh, I'm certified in those. I can fix that.
I wish someone knew something about a Macintosh here. Good old Macintosh computer. Have you heard anyone say that in the past 10 years, Andrew?
No. no one says Macintosh.
plus, this game is too complicated for kids, so.
Tell that to the kid, the like 8-year-old kid that played at Gen Con and whooped Eric Caoli's ass all over the table.
Dude, I think I know that kid. He's Zane? From, yeah, he's from Bloomington.
Yeah, that kid's the shit. He's awesome.
Eric Caoli. Canadian Nationals champ, right?
Yeah, Canadian Nationals champ Eric C. lost to a literal child at Gen Con.
why should you not have played Pirate Haley?
Because I'm bad at Shaper.
Because I'm bad.
And I had never played it. I was just like, this seems simple. And it was, but then I played three Asmari decks that played turn one Scarcities. And against like, a resource deck.
Damn,
and I'm just like, fuck this. I guess it's going to be one of those days.
I also struggled with Geist because I never played Geist before and I brought him to a store champ in Michigan. And
oops.
I played against that as Mari and it was turn one Scarcity and I was like,
I hate Scarcity so much. I it's a great card, but god damn it, I hate that card so much.
Right. It's definitely a Daemon card.
Yeah. Oh, it's a Daemon card.
Daemon just did not have a
What's
sense.
That? You want to play your game? Well, fuck you. Too bad. You don't get to do what your deck's supposed to do anymore.